dozens more Palestinians have fallen victim to the ongoing U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, raising the total death toll from the aggression to nearly 31,000. The resistance movement Hamas emphasizes that Israel is hindering all efforts by mediators to finalize the ceasefire agreements in the Gaza Strip. And Yemen's Ansarullah leader stresses that the naval operations in the Red and Arabian Seas will never stop unless the genocide and siege on Gaza comes to an end.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
More than 5 months into the Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, the regime's incessant airstrikes and shelling keep claiming innocent lives in the besieged territory. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, over 80 people were killed and 140 others injured since Wednesday. Several Palestinians lost their lives after the regime's troopers once again opened fire on crowds waiting for aid trucks in the west of Gaza City. In the north of Gaza City, an aerial raid on a mosque in the Jabalia refugee camp also claimed lives. Meanwhile, malnutrition and dehydration persist, inflicting severe consequences on the Palestinian population. Gaza's medical sources say that the number of people who died from malnutrition and dehydration has surged to 20. More than 30,800 Gazans, most of them women and children, have been killed since Israel launched its war in early October. Jimmy McGoldrick, UN Humanitarian Coordinator for the Occupied Palestinian Territory, has warned of serious acute malnutrition in the northern parts of Gaza. He says that the UN will assess on Thursday how it can use an Israeli military-controlled road to deliver more humanitarian aid to desperate Palestinians.
Hunger has reached catastrophic levels, and especially in the north of Gaza, which we haven't served for weeks. And yesterday's convoy attempt was again disrupted because of the ransacking of that and the insecurity. Their children are now, as we see in the images on the media, who are dying of hunger-related diseases. And in order to prevent that from happening, we have to have a plan that allows us to, you know, prevent famine. That we need to significantly scale up the humanitarian assistance in there. And that would be that, you know, we have to use this military road, this fence road at the side, on the eastern side, to allow material to come from the crossing point at Kerem Shalom and Rafah all the way up to the north and into the north. This road runs parallel to the edge of Gaza Strip. It's on the eastern side, and it's a road that the military used to use their own supply lines and deliver, moving in. They have a number of crossing points into below Karni. There's a place called Berry, which is the crossing point they'll probably use. The idea would be that you get the trucks scanned, and there'll be 14 or 15 trucks from WFP will be scanned. They go outside onto the road, and then they enter into this route. I think it's called Route 93 or 96, and then you go north on that road. There is no traffic on that road other than military traffic, and we have to get up at least 300 trucks a day. Right now, we're lucky if we're getting about 150. And so to address those issues properly, we have to do that. And these other options like airdrops, these are helpful, but these are not going to address the significant needs, which can only be done by road transport. And that's something we have to do. And it's when you get a time like Ramadan coming up, it pulls into focus how desperate people find themselves in. So I think people are looking for a way to get back to something normal, something more stable and something more certain. And hopefully that will happen in the near future, and hopefully that we get some sort of pause which will allow us to stabilize people's health, people's food security.
The Chinese foreign minister says that his country supports the full UN membership of a Palestinian state, urging other members of the Security Council to refrain from creating any obstacles to the issue.
China firmly supports the just cause of the Palestinian people to restore their legitimate national rights and has always been committed to a comprehensive and lasting solution to the Palestinian issue. We support Palestine's membership as full United Nations member state and call on certain Security Council members not to set obstacles to this.
Wang Yi also called the ongoing deadly Israeli onslaught on Gaza a tragedy for humankind and a disgrace for civilization. He reiterated Beijing's call for an immediate ceasefire, saying that there are no justifications for the continuation of war and no excuses for the killing of civilians. The top Chinese diplomat said that historical injustices suffered by the Palestinians cannot continue for generations without being corrected. Beijing has always been sympathetic to the Palestinian cause and supportive of a two-state solution. The Palestinian delegation is in New York to meet with the UN chief and the president of the Security Council to highlight Gaza's catastrophic conditions. Two medics accompanying the group recount their harrowing experience and the loss of their family members during a presser held alongside the Palestinian envoy to the UN. Let's take a listen.
You guys heard it in TVs and everything, but honestly, we lived every single day for 13 days in Gaza, and it wasn't easy. You saw all what you're going to hear this. I saw it in my eyes, and I've treated patients, and I cried every single day. And thank God that I came back here to at least be their voice, not my voice, their voice. I'm a maxillofacial surgeon. I lived in the state. I volunteered on a mission, so I joined a mission recently to the European hospital in Gaza. I stayed there for 2 weeks. We lived at the hospital. We treated a lot of patients. We, as a group, we treated more than 200 patients. Myself, I treated 16 surgeries. It's not the surgeries you have done. It's the amount of displaced people and the active refugee camp that I lived in. People live in the tents, live in the floor, live in the wards.
Since the 7th of October, my family members, over 150 of them, have been murdered by Israel's brutal assault on Gaza, either by Israeli bombardment, snipers, or the cruel and ruthless denial of humanitarian aid, with no access to clean water, with food, equitable health care services. Thousands more have been tormented with horrific injuries, forced starvation, trauma, and displacement to evacuation camps and catastrophic living conditions. In December, one of our family members, Sabri Al-Farra, was murdered in his home by an Israeli airstrike with his 9 young children. His unfortunate wife survived. She was 8 months pregnant. She was displaced to an evacuation camp where she gave birth to her baby boy 1 month later in January. Her child, her newborn infant, died 20 days later from the cold and the harsh conditions in the camps. Today, none of us are here for condolences. We're not here for apologies. We're here for immediate action. We have demonstrated that every minute signifies the loss of a life, the starvation of a child. And so we need an immediate and permanent, not temporary, permanent ceasefire now.
Palestinians continue to resist against the invading Israeli forces as the regime keeps its onslaught on besieged territory. In their latest operations, Palestinian resistance groups targeted Israeli military vehicles in Al-Zaytun neighborhood south of Gaza City, inflicting losses on the enemy. The resistance fighters have also targeted an Israeli Merkava tank in eastern Jabalia. The Israeli military has confirmed one of its soldiers has been killed and 13 more have been injured during the clashes with Palestinians. Israel says 247 of its troops have been killed since the beginning of the ground invasion into Gaza. Palestinians, however, say that Israel hides the real number of its casualties to prevent public anger. The Hamas resistance movement says that Israel has thwarted all efforts by mediators to reach a ceasefire agreement in the Gaza Strip. A senior Hamas official said that Israel has rejected to end its onslaught on the besieged strip to ensure aid entrance and the return of displaced Palestinians. The Hamas delegation has left Cairo without achieving a breakthrough in negotiations. Hamas says the talks are set to resume next week. Envoys from the U.S., Qatar, and Hamas were involved in talks for ceasefire agreements. The parties are scrambling to reach an agreement before the Muslim holy month of Ramadan that begins on March 10. The leader of Yemen's Ansarullah says the movement will continue its sophisticated operations on Israeli-linked ships in the strategic waterways around the country until the ongoing genocide in Gaza comes to an end. Abdel Malik al-Houthi also warned the Israeli regime of the upcoming operations, stressing that they will be greater in scale and impact. Houthi then slammed the U.S. complicity in the Israeli onslaught on Gaza. He said the U.S. delivers aid to Gaza in an attempt to whitewash its primary role in enabling the genocide of Palestinians through military and financial support for Israel. Houthi also censured the Israeli attacks on starving Palestinians who were scrambling for food and patients in hospitals. He said that Israel's atrocities are aimed at compensating for the regime's failure in achieving its stated goals. The leader of the Ansarullah also called on the Islamic countries to go beyond mere condemnation and take practical steps to end the aggression on Gaza. He added an all-out boycott campaign by the Islamic nations could have rendered the regime totally bankrupt within months. Well, the Yemeni army has launched yet another attack on a U.S. vessel in the Gulf of Aden. U.S. officials say that at least three crew members were killed in the attack. Abdul Latif al-Washali has more from Sana'a.
Hours after targeting two American destroyers in the Red Sea and at the same location where the sunken British ship Roby Mar was attacked, the spokesman for the Yemeni army stated that they had successfully targeted the American cargo ship True Confidence in the Gulf of Aden with naval missiles, causing the ship to catch fire.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a targeting operation against the American ship in the Gulf of Aden with a number of suitable naval missiles. The hit was accurate thanks to God, which led to the fire breaking out on it. The targeting operation came after the ship's crew rejected warning messages from the Yemeni naval forces.
Officials suggest that the U.S. claims of the loss of lives come within the Western narrative and could be a fabrication to justify larger aggression against Sana'a and to garner international support against Yemeni naval operations. U.S. officials reported that three of the ship's crew members were killed while others were critically injured.
Observers state that the Yemeni army's latest operation substantiates that the threats of escalating naval operations were not mere media propaganda. Moreover, they assert that the Yemeni army has already begun deploying unexpected weaponry, catching the U.S. Navy off guard and leading to the failure to protect its vessels. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the arrogant powers commit oppression, aggression, and genocide wearing a disguise of democracy and human rights. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remarks during a meeting with Iran's newly elected members of the country's Assembly of Experts. Ayatollah Khamenei said the events in Gaza are a clear example of oppression by the arrogant powers, and Iran opposes that. He also condemned the West's support for Israeli atrocities and said it's against any logic and human conscience. Ayatollah Khamenei explained that Iran has no conflict with governments, countries, and nations, but it does oppose oppression and aggression. The Iranian leader emphasized that his country will always stand at the forefront of the battle against global arrogance. The Islamic Republic of Iran has long pursued a policy of deepening ties with neighboring and regional states. Russia is one of the countries that Iran has boosted its cooperation with in recent years. The two countries have close economic and political ties and are now eyeing the opportunities to further strengthen and broaden their ties.
In recent years, Iran and Russia have significantly enhanced their cooperation in a wide range of fields. A key driving force behind the growth of bilateral relations between the two countries is forging a new geoeconomic reality in one of the world's most strategic regions. Both nations have been pursuing several objectives in this regard. They have been after establishing an independent monetary system, energy market, and parallel supply chains outside the control of Western regulatory frameworks to circumvent sanctions imposed in an attempt to isolate them. And their efforts have yielded significant success. In the field of trade, despite facing severe sanctions, Iran has managed to surpass the $2 billion threshold in exports to Russia. Iran's exports to Russia predominantly consist of fruits, polymer products, vehicles, non-metal minerals, and chemical products. Similarly, Russian exports to Iran, valued at the same amount, mainly comprise agricultural products. Iranian officials have hailed the economic cooperation between the two nations as closer than ever. The total value of annual bilateral trade between the two countries reached $4.9 billion in 2023, according to Iran's official statistics. A Russian economic delegation was in Tehran in late February for the 17th round of their Joint Economic Commission. Both sides then pledged to boost trade tenfold over the coming years. Mahdi Abusyan, Tehran.
Latest polls are showing that radical right parties are poised to secure the top position in several European countries at the next EU elections in June. Many have lost faith in the European Union and its ability to work for the common good of all Europeans. Our correspondent Max Civelli has more from Rome.
According to the latest European Council on Foreign Relations think tank's forecast for the 2024 European Parliament elections, there will be a major shift to the right in many member states in the June vote. The forecast also indicates that populist radical right parties are likely to gain votes and seats across the European Union, while centre-left and green parties will be losing votes and seats. Far-right formations are poised to secure the top position in 9 countries, including Austria, France, Italy and Poland.
The risk that right and far-right formation will change the face of the EU at the next elections in June is dramatically high. Domestic and foreign policy choices will be definitely affected. This can be explained by looking at the policies in favor of the multinational and of the United States that have been adopted so far by the EU leadership, policies that go against the very interest of the Europeans.
Some analysts argue that an increasing number of EU citizens hold Brussels accountable for soaring food costs, economic stagnation, and deteriorating living standards across the old continent. The European Union has failed in many ways to deliver on its promises. Europeans' wealth has been gravely tarnished by more than 2 decades of tough fiscal measures and wild privatization and outsourcing policies, which have resulted in widespread company closures and massive layoffs. EU officials have recently unveiled plans to boost defense production by promoting joint military purchases of European-produced arms among the member states. From February 2022 to June 2023, EU states spent more than 100 billion euros on defense acquisitions, with the US alone accounting for more than 60%. In 2022, more than 95 million people in the European Union, or 22% of the population, were at risk of poverty or social exclusion. Max Civili, Rome.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Amid warnings by the United Nations of a looming famine in the blockaded Gaza Strip, which the United States enabled for nearly 5 months, Washington has now embarked on a new public relations campaign. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, 3 American military aircraft airdropped about 36,000 food parcels over a tiny region with a 2.3 million population, which has been reeling under U.S.-backed Israeli regime bombing since October 7th. Unsurprisingly, U.S. military cameras were on standby to capture the moment when the aid was being loaded into the aircraft at night and the cargo later dropped from the sky. Many rightly saw it as a photo opportunity to mitigate domestic and international public anger for Washington's direct complicity in the worst humanitarian catastrophe currently unfolding in Gaza. The flashlights were switched on to add that extra dramatic Hollywood-style war element to the whole charade, with troops loading the cargo on a C-130 Hercules military jets in the middle of the night. The U.S. Central Command published the videos for global news media outlets, many of whom played along by broadcasting the warlike footage. The Biden administration tried to get a message across that the U.S. military is helping to ease the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza while being the mastermind and architect of their colossal tragedy. The U.S. cargo landed along the Gaza coast, some in the sea itself, and for each U.S. food parcel, hundreds of starving and desperate Palestinians rushed to get a hold of it, drawing criticism from aid agencies and rights groups. Tens of thousands of others walked back to their makeshift tents, hungry and traumatized. For 5 months, they have been struggling to survive amid relentless bombings and crippling siege. The U.S. airdrops of food were inefficient because only small amounts of aid can be dropped at a time from a plane in what was a major operation for all the wrong reasons. It is another darkest stain in the history books for the United States regime, which has allowed the Zionist regime to kill and starve families instead of applying pressure on Tel Aviv to at least turn the water taps back on. If the White House was serious about helping the starving Palestinians, Biden could ring Tel Aviv and force the regime to open the land crossings to Gaza for real aid to enter, a key demand of UN agencies. However, that is not the case. The United States regime is directly aiding and abetting this genocide. Historically, in cases such as the Second World War, airdrops were used as a last resort. It shouldn't be a last resort for Gaza today, where the large majority of the 2.3 million Palestinians are on the verge of famine or deliberate starvation, while food and water are a few kilometers away. The Biden administration reportedly sent three C-130 Hercules aircraft over Gaza. One military cargo plane holds the equivalent of one truckload of aid. We keep hearing that Gaza needs an estimated 500 trucks of aid every day at minimum. 500 trucks of aid is the pre-war figure that wasn't enough then. The trucks required today to feed the starving people of Gaza is much higher. Yet, 500 trucks are waiting just across the border in Egypt to enter Gaza, and the Zionist regime with America's backing is preventing them from crossing. They are opting instead for airdrops, which may come across as compassionate to some watching on TV, but the reality is it degrades Palestinians who have been devalued as human beings for nearly 5 months now. Rightly so, the U.S. measures have backfired, drawing sharp criticism from aid agencies and rights groups. Medical Aid for Palestinians said in a statement, "Instead of dropping packages from the sky, some of which end up in the sea or outside of Gaza, and which the most vulnerable cannot reach in any case, the U.S., the U.K. and others should ensure that Israel immediately opens all crossings into Gaza for aid and aid workers to assist those in need." The International Rescue Committee said airdrops are not the solution to relieve this suffering and distract time and effort from proven solutions to help at scale. What makes this remarkably shameful for the Biden administration is that not only has the White House enabled the starvation to be used as a weapon of war in Gaza, collective punishment is a war crime, but it is American weapons that have murdered and starved the Palestinians. The Zionist regime war on Gaza is enabled by arms made in the United States, which is pulling the strings in the war on the besieged territory and using its veto power at the UN Security Council to avoid a ceasefire. These airdrops are also inaccurate, as the US military has no control over precisely where the cargo will fall, leaving the dangerously large pallets parachuted off the back of planes to potentially land on a crowd of people in what is a very densely populated strip. And if they land in the sea, there is a serious risk of Israeli regime warships shooting at Palestinians desperate to collect them, with similar deadly incidents happening many times in the recent past. The UN has warned that famine in Gaza is inevitable unless aid deliveries increase significantly, with a quarter of 2.3 million population one step away from starvation. Starvation has already started to take the lives of Palestinian children. The World Health Organization data shows at least 10 children have been officially registered in a hospital as having starved to death. Highlighting the crisis in Gaza, a WHO spokesperson said, "The unofficial number can unfortunately be higher. The footage from Gaza looks like a powerful natural disaster has hit the territory, but this is nothing natural. The latest decision by the Biden administration highlights how much of a U.S.-Israeli man-made disaster the Gaza Strip has become. This is despite reports surfacing of Palestinians eating animal feed to survive and children dying from starvation as a result of malnutrition and dehydration."
Hidden Files. Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi and very happy to bring you a very special Hidden Files today, dealing with the situation in Palestine and talking to someone who understands and knows the Zionist regime very well. I'm very happy to welcome to the program Sheikh Talal Abdurrahman Shirim, a former prisoner in Israeli regime prisons, and he's also currently the head of the prisoners' files for Hamas. Thank you so much, Sheikh, for being with us here on Hidden Files. Now, as a former prisoner who spent 18 years in Israeli jails, how much do you value your freedom today, and how hopeful are you about the liberation of the occupied Palestinian territories?
I seek refuge in Allah from the curse of Satan. May peace and blessings of Allah be upon the most honorable creation and the master of Prophet Muhammad and upon all his family. First of all, thank you for having me today to clarify issues regarding the prisoner's file. Currently, I'm in charge of this file. No one can speak about a prison better than the one who was jailed in it. According to poetry, no one knows the difficulty of something except those who are grappling with it. Freedom is priceless and a must. If I want to maintain my dignity, I have to preserve this homeland. Hence, what we pursue, which is the liberation of Palestine, is precious and the price that we pay is high. The Palestinian detainee suffers two pains. The first pain when his house is raided by the occupation's army. The troops detonate the doors using bombs and then enter the home and begin ransacking it, destroying everything inside. They terrify the children, women and fathers and mothers in plain sight of the prisoner, who is handcuffed behind his back. Any person in that house who wants to protest or speak is hid in plain sight of the entire family. This is the first suffering that the detainee grapples with. The army ransacks the house and takes everything inside. If the troops find money, they steal it. They also steal the jewelry of the women, and they take any electronic devices, such as computers and phones. They confiscate everything. And if the prisoner has a car, they also seize it under the pretext that it was used in supporting terrorism. That prisoner is taken in plain sight of the children who scream. This also constitutes a suffering for the family, for the children, for the women, for the father and for the mother. Afterwards, the second suffering that the prisoner will endure begins when he is placed in the army troops' vehicle and taken for interrogation. On the way to the interrogation, the detainee is physically and verbally assaulted and hears blasphemous words. All of that is part of a psychological torture that precedes the interrogation. We will talk about the interrogation later in the interview, but I want to say that the interrogation is inhuman. Allah the Almighty said in the Quran, "Indeed, we have dignified the children of Adam." So it doesn't make sense that another child of Adam comes and breach your freedom and attack you and your ideas and religion and doctrine. That's kind of insane, but as I have said, Palestine is precious. Palestine is the heart of the Arab and Muslim world, and whatever sacrifices we make, they will remain slight compared to the goal of liberating Palestine.
Well, according to human rights groups, more than 8,000 Palestinians are currently lodged in Israeli jails. Can you share more specific details about the total number of detainees, including those arrested since October the 7th?
Unfortunately, there is false information even among the human rights groups, the Red Cross, etc. But as a person who is in charge of that file, I will give you the accurate figures. Before October 7th, some 5,200 detainees were imprisoned, including about 450 children and minors under the age of 18 and 35 women. The rest of the detainees were men. But after October 7th, the occupation authorities launched a crazy, brutal campaign against Palestinians, arresting members of the Legislative Council, engineers, doctors, university students, general public, former prisoners, women and children. Now, the number of Palestinians held in Israeli jails exceeds 12,000. That means 7,000 more Palestinians have been detained since October 7th. That's kind of insane because about 7,000 people were detained during just 4 months. Between 7,000 and 8,000 people are also reported missing, and their whereabouts are unknown. So we're talking about a huge number of detainees and prisoners. These were the actual figures of Palestinian detainees held in Israeli jails.
We often come across horrifying stories of systematic torture inside Israeli jails. Inmates electrocuted, deprived of food and sleep, denied medical care, handcuffed and assaulted, and even sexual abuse. Does the apartheid regime use torture as a weapon of war against Palestinians?
I have been detained 10 times since the first Intifada or uprising in 1987. I was detained and released 10 times, so I have a lot of experience and have a lot to say about what takes place during the interrogations and about the horrifying stories I heard from my fellow detainees. Regarding torture, I have said that the torture starts from the moment of arrest and continues until the end of the interrogation. During the interrogation, all inhuman techniques are used, such as stripping the detainees of his clothes, with the interrogator mocking him or flirting with him as a kind of assault. But honestly, no sexual assault takes place, and I haven't heard something about that. The individual, however, could be threatened with sexual assault. The wives or sisters of some of the detainees were also detained and brought to the interrogation. There, the men were threatened with subjecting their wives or sisters to sexual abuse if they refused to make a confession. This is a method to force the detainees to speak and make a confession. Some of the detainees break down and speak up as they want their wives, sisters, or mothers to return home, and subsequently the interrogator gets what he wants. Sometimes it is the detainees who threaten the interrogators that if their wives or sisters were not freed, they would witness unprecedented things. These strong men instilled fear in the regime's authorities that later released those women who were used as tools to exert pressure on their husbands or brothers who were being interrogated. Regarding the other techniques, I personally spent a week, 7 days, sitting on a chair with my hands cuffed behind my back and my face covered. I spent 7 days without sleep and without food during the fasting month of Ramadan. They were giving us just one meal every 2 or 3 days. When I was asking for water, they were spilling water on the floor. So if you wanted to drink water, you had to drink the water spilled on the floor. These were among the interrogation techniques. There were other techniques that depended on the case or the method adopted by the interrogator. There was the good guy, bad guy technique, where one interrogator speaks nicely, kindly asking the detainee whether he has a wife and children, and speaks about releasing him and giving him money in order to encourage him to speak up. In return, there was an aggressive interrogator who was beating, insulting, and spitting on the detainee, and doing everything you can imagine. What's currently happening in Israeli jails is harsher than what happened in the U.S. detention centers of Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo Bay. I can say that they all learned from the same source how to torture and humiliate the people. There are many methods of torture in jails that require several interviews in order to address them, as each person and each charge has a certain method. Sometimes interrogations result in deaths. In Israeli jails, more than 5 were killed due to torture. They were suffocated while being handcuffed. They put a piece of cloth on the mouth of the detainee. The detainee could be suffering from a disease and the interrogator doesn't know that, and subsequently, such techniques could result in his death. Some people died during the interrogations. When I was in the Tolkien Central Prison, one of the detainees who was sitting next to me during the interrogation was martyred. He died due to torture. Then, there are many methods of torture. Sometimes they even resort to Israel's Supreme Court to obtain a license to torture ruling because the interrogator doesn't want to bear the responsibility of that severe torture and wants the court to be responsible instead if that detainee dies. So they obtain a decision from the court and sit the detainee down and shake him for a long period of time, and that subsequently inflicts a brain injury on him that leaves him either dead or mentally ill. Some people die because of that method of heinous torture. What people watch on TV is nothing compared to what actually happens. You saw how they stripped scores, hundreds and thousands of people of their clothes in front of cameras amid freezing temperatures, let alone what happens behind closed doors. They strip people of their clothes and put them on a wet floor and turn on air conditioners, switching back and forth from cooling to heating. During 1 to 2 days, those detainees fall ill due to that method of torture. All these methods were aimed at pressing the detainee to forcibly admit to something. There are methods that are less heinous, but still heinous, such as imprisoning the individual in a certain room with people portrayed as honorable Palestinian detainees and fighters, but in fact, they are spies who work for the Israeli regime and deceive the detainee to obtain information from him. There are other soft techniques, such as providing the detainee with the most delicious food. While the detainee is hungry, the interrogator brings delicious food and begins eating and asks the detainee if he wants to share him the food, saying, "How are you? Here you are." If the detainee ate, He will also be offered coffee, tea, cigarettes, etc. That's another method to obtain confession from the weak people. But the real fighters refuse to eat or drink anything. No matter how much I spoke about methods of torture, they still exceed the imagination. And what we currently see is just part of the suffering that Palestinian detainees are grappling with in Israeli jails. That was concerning the interrogation phase. In the next stage, and after a forced confession is written, the detainee could be sent from cells to another place that we call the big prison. There, he sees his fellow detainees and begins a new life compatible with the prison's laws, which are set by the regime's authorities, who place each four or five people in a 2x2 or 2x3 meter room. There are also larger rooms, such as 10x5 meter rooms, in which 30 to 40 prisoners are placed. Then the prisoners are diverse. That was what I had to say in brief about the issue of the torture of detainees.
I mean, it's so unbelievable and so heartbreaking hearing what the prisoners go through because of the Zionist regime. And recently, a statement by the Palestinian Prisoners Club said detainees are being denied medical care, not transferred to clinics or hospitals in case of medical emergency. Is it because of their protests against the inhumane prison conditions?
While we are in a state of war, all the laws have changed. Despite its ugliness, the occupation ultimately adheres to the law of the International Committee of the Red Cross or some international and human rights bodies in order to appear democratic and civilized. But all the masks have fallen amid the ongoing war. There is no democracy, there are no human rights, no humanity in the Israeli regime's dealings. So we see it innovating new torture techniques for the sake of deterrence. The regime used to insult to obtain forced confession. But now, and amid the war, the regime aims at pressing the resistance. The regime uses the scenes of the arrest of women and children in order to press the resistance to submit to its demands. Then they want to obtain what they failed to obtain through weapons and explosives and through murders and physical assaults by pressuring the fighters when they witness the mistreatment of their women, children, and people. That is a means of pressure and a dirty war. Any war has its own means, such as a means of destruction, such as bombs and weapons of mass destruction. But the other means is to torture the civilians who are not involved in any operations in order to press the fighters to give up and raise the white flag. The more dirty method is that occupation deprives people from food and water. In northern Gaza, we have famine in every sense of the word. There is no edible thing there. There are more than 60,000 pregnant women who have nothing to eat. How will their fetuses be nourished? Dozens of fetuses die in their mother's wombs, and those who are born alive find no milk or drink. The babies have nothing to eat and subsequently die. There are cases of child deaths due to malnourishment. In prisons, we knew the meaning of hunger because we went on hunger strikes to restore our rights that the prison's authorities deprived us from, or to protest against punitive measures adopted against us. Sometimes, we didn't eat anything for a month or 2 months, so we felt pains, including in the head and the knee, and grappled with weakness. After 2 to 3 weeks, the hunger striker becomes unable to stand up and walk, and instead remains in bed. Thus, hunger leaves people collapsed. The case now is not concerning a number of hunger strikers in prisons, but concerning an entire nation that is suffering. More than 700,000 people in Gaza have no food. Israel also destroys medical facilities such as hospitals and medicines. There are no medicines in Gaza. There are 10,000 cancer patients in Gaza, and they have no medication and are dying slowly. Regarding the normal cases, we have over 350,000 patients who don't even have access to a Panadol tablet for the headache, let alone those whose legs or hands have been amputated. How will they be treated? Many of them see their bodies decompose. And when a decomposed part of their body is amputated, another part begins to decompose. So they cut the other part off after a week or so on. Someone told me that he buried his father in three phases, as his father's hand and leg were cut off during a strike on their house. So the son took them and buried them under the ground. Later, that same family was targeted in another strike that amputated his father's second leg. So the son took it and buried it in another cemetery. The father later died due to those injuries. So the son buried him for the third time. Can you imagine that a person can be buried in three phases? Where does that happen? All of that take place amid the world's silence. I mean, the entire world, including human rights organizations and the United Nations, all their meetings are fruitless. That's because Israel is the spoiled son of the United States. Israel is the U.S.'s dirty tool in the region. So we fight for the sake of our dignity and in order to restore our land. No matter the price that we pay, that will remain little compared to the restoration of our dignity and the preservation of our land and sanctities. God willing, we will move forward on the path until the end.
Earlier this month, a human rights group cited shocking testimonies from recently freed detainees, including the Israeli military, inviting settlers to watch the gory torture of Palestinians. On the other hand, we saw how Israeli captives spoke highly of their captors. I mean, what does this say about the two sides?
I spoke about part of those scenes, but there is another tragedy. These are settlers. Settlers have violated the remaining part of the Palestinian land, going beyond the part granted by the world. The world gave Israel a state and gave Palestine a state, but it was not established. Day by day, settlers steal the land. The disaster is that the settlers burn and rob the houses and attack the Palestinians and do whatever they want, while the Israeli army does not move a muscle. The army sees everything. What hurts more is that the army brings those settlers to the prisons to see how Palestinian detainees are humiliated, or subsequently they boost the morale of their people and settlers through showing them the pains of the Palestinians who are held in the prisons. That's humanly unacceptable, and those people breached all the limits of humanity, and we shouldn't even call them human beings.
Some reports have pointed to an alarming spike in so-called administrative detention since October 7th, mostly minors who were held without charges or without trial. How would you describe this travesty of justice?
The detention process is divided into several sections. I spoke about the first section, which is the interrogation and investigation into cases and operations carried out by Palestinian fighters who strive to restore their land. But there is another kind of detentions in which no interrogations take place, and subsequently the detainees are not subjected to related torture. However, they experience another kind of suffering as the detainee is imprisoned without charge or interrogation. Administrative detention is originally British. When Britain was ruling Palestine, it created administrative detentions. Later, the Israeli regime inherited that policy from the British. Under that policy, the detainee is imprisoned without a charge for 6 months that could be extended for another 6 months and later for another year and so on. Some people were jailed for 18 to 20 years under the administrative detention policy just because the regime's authorities suspected them without evidence or proof. That's the height of crime. No other part of the world uses that policy. In fact, Palestine is the sole occupied country in the world. All the countries have been liberated, except Palestine. In Palestine, all inhumane laws are practiced. Many people were jailed under the administrative detentions, and that policy was not used against just 5, 10, 20, or 100 people. Before the Al-Aqsa flood operation, there were over 1,000 administrative detainees. But after Israel launched a brutal arrest campaign, the number of administrative detainees exceeded 3,000. They include doctors, engineers, ordinary people, and university students. Even minors are jailed under the administrative detention policy. I also want to mention one of the ugliest practices that I just remembered, which is the unexplained death of people in prison. Since October 7th, 11 people, including administrative detainees, died under torture. They were killed during just 4 months. Isn't that kind of insane? In return, you saw how Palestinians in Gaza treated the Israeli captives. They treated them humanely and shared their food with them, according to the Israeli captives' testimonies. We saw a released woman carrying her dog, while people in Gaza have no food. Her dog was in a good condition. So the way Israeli captives are treated differ from the way Palestinians held in Israeli jails are treated. In Palestine, the Israeli captives are treated humanely, despite the war and destruction. In the Israeli regime, which claims to be a democracy, you see the height of ignobility.
At the same time, there are also heartening stories about detainees engaging in creative activities inside jails. For example, Bassem Khandanjik recently released his book, A Mask in the Color of Sky, written inside of a jail and nominated for an international prize. Where does this never say die spirit come from?
Sometimes the individual who loves the life never submits to pressure and always looks for ways to develop himself and convey his message to the world, even from the prison. The big prison to which the detainee is sent after being interrogated is a school where the detainee learns from the professors who are also imprisoned. Imprisonment is an ordeal, but we turn it into a granting. Some people were illiterate when they entered prison, but they left it with college degrees. Some people memorized the Holy Quran in prison. We turned prisons into schools and universities. We reached agreements with universities in Gaza and Lebanon and contacted them through professors who are held in these prisons. That has helped educate the Palestinians. Palestinians are by nature intellectual and love knowledge and dissemination of science. So we saw them writing books. The book that you mentioned was nominated for an international award, so its author gained fame. But there are hundreds of other people who authored books while in prison, and their books are released and just need to be interpreted into English and other languages. So we turn the ordeal into a blessing through investing in knowledge and education inside these prisons. There were 11 brothers who got a PhD degree while they were in prison. Each year, about 150 people get a master's degree either from Gaza University, Palestine University, Jinan University in Lebanon, or other universities. So the education process is ongoing in prisons, despite the attempts of the prison authorities to prevent detainees from learning. These attempts include tearing up papers and breaking pens. We even went on hunger strikes for more than 45 days in order to obtain a book, pen, or a notebook. So we were grabbing our right to education. At some point, we even forced the regime to give us access to some specializations in Hebrew universities. They only gave some of them that access with the aim of changing their ideas. Some experts in Hebrew affairs learned Hebrew inside prison and studied in Israeli universities. The Palestinians are heroes and generous. The Palestinian nation pursues freedom and knowledge. Like other nations, we want to preserve our dignity and freedom. We are the sole country in the world that's still occupied.
Thank you very much for being with us here on Hidden Files, Sheikh Talal Abdulrahman Sharim, a former prisoner of the Israeli regime and the head of the prisoners' files for Hamas. I appreciate you being with us. Thank you for being with us on another Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi, and goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.